Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
Hey, Ron, buddy, why you roll so slow? Tell me, how can you roll?
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by the Salty Dogs? You like the Salty Dogs? Arkansas's premier feel-good country band, the Salty Dogs, have had their music featured on TLC's Trading Spaces and HBO's Rectify. They have CDs for sale after the show, and more can be found at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack in the River Market District of downtown Little Rock. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my left here playing for us tonight is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark was a featured house guitarist at the late Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? These Delta screen doors with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox and are for sale. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and VL at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight, our writers all find themselves or others saying, "Say what?" in various ways. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, a hectic trip for Jane Gatewood ends with a line that pretty much sums it up, and we'll end the night with a misunderstood Bill Scott. But let's start the night here at Tales from the South with Jennifer Winningham and her friends not speaking the language in Monkey Business.
Having received a blank stare from the receptionist after asking about the bus to the Arenal Volcano, I suspected it was a communication barrier. English is my first and only language. In all our research, one thing was clear. Every travel guide and every person who had ever been there before repeated the same warning. Do not drive in Costa Rica. The roads are horrible. Not one of those sources thought to mention that buses don't run on Sundays. Okay, so we have no ride to our next destination, which is several hours away. My companions commandeered a hotel computer, and I got on a telephone to figure out some options. Within 90 minutes, we were on the road driving in Costa Rica. Our cruise, our first vacation together, had been canceled because of the 2009 swine flu. I had just gotten my first passport, and by golly, I wanted a stamp. I was ready to join Travel Club International. Because the cruise was canceled, we quickly launched into Plan B. 14 days later, we had conducted research, booked it on our own, and were headed to Central America. Costa Rica, here we come. Rich, Rebecca, and I were already friends. We recognized this adventure as a make it or break it in our relationship. After all, there's something very different in having lunch on a given weekday and seeing each other through things like, well, let's just call it gastric distress in a foreign country. Rich traveled to Europe every year the past several years, alone. In fact, he'd never vacationed with people. Rebecca had lived all over the world as a military daughter and later as a military wife. And me? Well, gosh, I'd been to places like the Gulf Coast and Six Flags and Disney World twice. Epcot's an international adventure, right? Yeah, this could be interesting. So after a very uneventful flight to San Jose, we slept really well, and in the morning, we ordered the customary local fare, listed on the English language menu as the Tipico breakfast. Later, bellies full of black beans and rice, plantains, and other exotic morning foods, we started on the next leg of our journey toward the northern lowlands where the Arenal volcano is located, and ended up driving in Costa Rica. It wasn't long until we understood the appeals against driving in this very beautiful country. For instance, Laura, that's what we named the GPS's voice, Laura, she would say, "Turn right on the unpaved road." We saw a pothole deep enough and wide enough to easily bury a smart car. Now, why we picked Costa Rica is not obvious to me, even though I'm the one who suggested it. None of us is an outdoors person. We are not hikers, not climbers, not zip liners. So naturally, our first excursion was a waterfall nature park. However, my knees quickly vetoed the 480-step descent to the best view of the main waterfall. Then we briefly considered zip lining. Briefly. Maybe some other time. On the way back to our hotel, the car in front of us suddenly stopped in the middle of the road. The driver gunned it in reverse. Rebecca screamed and laid down on the horn. She was a champ. The car backed into the ditch instead of us, turned around, and headed on its way. Rebecca also drove the next day en route to the cloud forest. 3 hours later, nearing our destination, we encountered a deluge and very many steep, curvy, unpaved roads. And Laura became confused. "Turn left and then turn left. Turn left and then turn left." We had had it with Laura, but eventually we made it. A 20-something, really easygoing Tico, that's what Costa Ricans call themselves, Ticos, Diego, donned a rain poncho and led us on a canopy tour of the cloud forest. Diego pointed out plants and trees and bugs, and we boarded the SkyTram for a half-mile ascent into the clouds. About halfway up, our car stopped. Diego didn't flinch. Not then, and not a moment later, when the walkie-talkie on his hip blared the voice of a comrade stationed safely below on the ground. "Diego, Diego!" Diego continued to stare off into the distance very calmly, almost bored. I asked Diego if it was normal to stop suspended in midair. Diego said no, as he clicked the button on the walkie-talkie to off. Well, we survived and saw not even one snake, praise God and all that is holy. And we were on the final leg of our journey the next morning. This day we were in for another long drive on bad, curvy roads. I was at the wheel when we approached a roadblock. The policia were all business and no English. Rich consulted the Costa Rican Spanish phrasebook. We could not catch a word the policeman was saying. I was amused and afraid at the same time. The policeman leaned all the way inside the car between me and the steering wheel, extending his index finger with thumb raised, and he seemed to be shouting, "Pistoles! Oh, no, no, we don't have guns." So they checked our trunk and we were on our way. Whew, that was close. Probably not, but it seemed like it. Rich, our semi-professional photographer, had been secretly clicking away, hoping to get a great candid of our favorite Costa Rican crime stopper. Less than 2 hours later, another roadblock. Are you kidding me? I was still driving and hadn't learned a single word of Costa Rican Spanish in the meantime. This person had a whole lot to say, none of which we understood. He talked and pointed in the distance with this crude stick in his hand, sort of a short tree branch with a red cloth attached to it. What sort of traditional Costa Rican scam could this be? Is he trying to sell it to us? Does he want us out of the car? Is he going to lead us into the forest? I'm not sure who figured it out or how, but this man only wanted us to take the flag to the other end of the construction zone. That's some irony right there. A road construction crew in Costa Rica. Relieved and laughing, we set off again, but I have no idea why I felt the need to hold the flag outside the window, a la Indy race car winner the whole way. Intentionally or not, whenever we plan a vacation, we develop expectations. There's something you must see or do, or else you'll feel let down. For this vacation, it was monkeys. We expected to see lots of sweet little white-faced monkeys frolicking all over Costa Rica. And so far, I'd seen zero. Along the drive to our last destination, Rebecca thought she saw howler monkeys in every tree along the beach to our right. Yeah, they weren't monkeys. Our last typico breakfast, prepared by a woman who uttered not a word to us, was served poolside just below our apartment window. We heard animal noises in the distance. Quietly, with excitement, I said, "Oh, listen, that must be monkeys." And Rich said, "Or maybe chickens." Well, it was chickens, but once you got monkeys on the brain, well. Our last day was the hottest yet. We were sweat-soaked before nearing Manuel Antonio National Forest. We suspected our clothes might be relegated to yard work attire if they survived intact. After hiking 3 hours, we were tired, hungry, disappointed, and defeated. Still no monkeys. This hike could have taken place in any of our beautiful Arkansas state parks. So let's just figure out how to get back to the car. We're already running late to check out of the apartment. What's that? Just in front of us, two women just stopped on the trail. There was a little white-faced monkey. And another monkey. A dozen monkeys. The world seemed as slow and quiet as we silently watched them play. They seemed neither afraid nor aggressive and put on a show as we captured still shots and video. Not one word was spoken between us and them, but we could understand them perfectly. It was magical. After refreshing showers and one last drive, we were headed home. We survived a week out of the country together for the very first time. Friendships deepened. Somebody asked, "Where are we going next year?"
Jennifer Winningham is a Bradford, Arkansas native and works in marketing at Verizon and Little Rock. She, Rebecca, and Rich went to Italy the year following tonight's tale, but that is a story for another time. Next on Tales from the South, the weather creates havoc and misunderstandings for Jane Gatewood in I'll Have Two Pina Coladas.
"Did you hear that?" asked Cindy. "Hear what?" I answered, conducting research in antiquing magazines. "I think it's a tornado siren." Jenna, Juana, Cindy and I had been on the road about an hour driving out of Mississippi when we noticed brewing clouds. Cindy turned off the CD player and I put down the magazines and searched for a local weather report on the FM radio while Jenna and Juana sat quietly in the back seat staring out the windows. Hearing no weather report, we sped to a town that we didn't recognize, but where we hoped to find shelter. We pulled into the first gas station we saw. After inspecting the restroom, Cindy asked the attendant, "Have y'all had a bad storm or anything lately?" "Yeah, we had a tornado. About 20 minutes ago, it tore up some trailers across town and a few roofs are off, but y'all are okay. It's way out in front of you." We showed him our map and he marked an X. "You are here. Y'all will be fine. It's over." As we drove east, we noticed heavy clouds and the rain picked up significantly. "I don't care what radio station you get, but get one," Cindy said. So I did. I tuned in to the Mississippi version of Greater Tuna. On the rural radio station, we heard a familiar accent. Arliss and Thurston from Greater Tuna, Mississippi, broke into regular programming to offer safety instructions. "Evacuate the trailer park. Tornado warning." The radio broadcasters tracked the storms on radar, commenting, "Ooh, that looks like a big thing, Thurston. It's a big one. Okay, all y'all over there in those counties over there." "What are those counties, Thurston?" "Why, that's Columbia County, Arliss, and also in the path is Union County and Baxter County, and ooh, it's a big one, Arliss." The whole time, I was trying to see the county names on my map with a magnifying glass. I couldn't tell up from down. Then Arliss and Thurston said in chorus, "Take cover!" The sirens were screaming all around. Normally known as competent women, we panicked. "How far to shelter?" I screamed. "Look for a place to pull off," Cindy instructed. Gawking at her in panic, I knew one thing for certain. "Cindy, I am not getting in a ditch filled with water and bugs and snakes and God knows what." I looked into the back seat. We had to do something fast. Jenna was preparing for the rapture, and Juana was rocking and praying, "Help me, Jesus," as she clutched her purse. Cindy said, "Hold on." The van wheeled around in a NASCAR U-turn at a median opening and careened away from the storms. Seeing a house off the road and up a gravel driveway, Cindy made a split decision. Into that unknown homeowner's driveway, we screeched, with the rain pummeling the van, adding more nerve-wracking noise than necessary to scare us. Cindy threw that van into park and jumped out. "Where are you going?" I shouted. "Aren't we going to stay in the van?" "You can stay here and get blown away if you want to," she yelled back, "but I am going into that house." "God's nightshirt," I screamed in my best Scarlett O'Hara imitation. Recognizing the terrible position I was in, and after a full second of consideration, I jumped out of the car and made a dash for the back door. Jenna and Juana were but a heartbeat behind. As Cindy banged on that back door, we all huddled on the whitewashed porch, crouching to escape the blowing rain. A young man peered through the mini blinds and then cracked the door open, still safe within his house behind a screen door. Explaining quickly, Cindy reported, "We are on an antiquing trip, caught in this storm, and we don't know where in the Sam Hill we are, and we are afraid of getting blown away. Please let us in." He hesitated a moment, but opened the door. "Come on in," he drawled. After listening to our quick tale of woe, he determined that we were harmless, just a bunch of old retired school teachers. We were barely secure in his kitchen when the phone rang. "That'll be Mama," he said. A boy knows his mama. Mama was visiting across the highway and had seen the van wheel into her driveway. She was immediately on the phone wondering what strangers drove into their driveway during the height of a tornado outbreak. "No, Mama, they ain't in the house. I made them stay in the garage. They ain't nothing but a bunch of old retired school teachers anyhow." Mr. Threadgill, a most entertaining young man, let us in on an Alabama secret. My sister attended the University of Alabama, but I was not smart enough. So I stopped by Auburn for a few years. Dad said I couldn't stay because I had run him out of money. I had to come home and work on the farm. Mama called back to let son know that the reports indicated the skies were clearing and safe passage was ahead. We told him goodbye through gales of laughter and profuse thank you for saving our lives. We hopped back into the van and pulled onto the highway for Huntsville. As we laughed and sped east, disaster sirens started wailing again. Unfortunately, there in who knows where, Alabama, a lone light glowed ahead, the Dairy Queen. The Dairy Queen was mobbed with travelers getting off the highway, so we pulled into the crammed parking lot, threw the van into park, jumped from the car, and sprinted for cover.
We fraidy cats headed straight for the bathrooms, hoping to clutch the handrails, the toilet bases, anything but a soggy shrub in a ditch. We joined Juana in a rousing chorus of Help Me Jesus. After several long minutes, the siren stopped. With no flying debris overhead, we exited our fraidy hole. Cindy was both exhausted and hungry, which for Cindy, that's a really bad sign. I joined her at the counter, ready to order some fortification, some real food, like a DQ sandwich. Cindy was so shaken by the overall experience that when she ordered, she stated, "I'll have two crystals, please." "We don't have crystals," droned the counter clerk. Cindy, tired, hungry, and upset, demanded to know, "And why not?" And that's when the counter clerk wagged her finger at Cindy and said, "Because this is not crystals. This is the Dairy Queen in Decatur, Alabama." With that, Cindy burst into tears and I into laughter. Doubled over, head on my hands on the counter, I decided it was time to quote that famous philosopher Garth Brooks. "Well, in that case," I said, "give me two piña coladas."
Jane Gatewood is retired and living in Rector, Arkansas, her husband's hometown. Jane writes human interest specials for the Clay County Times Democrat and feature articles for Delta Crossroads, the Arkansas Delta magazine. Her memoir is entitled Sunrise in a Lemon Sky. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, Bill Scott's mastery of the English language is tricky in Dress to Kill.
My sister had a wee-wee, and I had a little thing. You either have a wee-wee or a little thing. That's just the way the world works. Only in Arkansas, it's pronounced little thang. Finger is to fanger as thing is to thang. Not exactly the Queen's English, but it was right proper for those parts. It was 1973, North Little Rock, Arkansas. My parents and their friends in their mid-30s were at the height of their coolness. Desperate to be Rob and Laura Petrie from the Dick Van Dyke Show, mother wore capri pants and father smoked a pipe. They had cocktail parties, played Sinatra albums in the living room, and served fondue. Well, not exactly fondue. Redneck cheese dip, Rotel and Velveeta. And the cocktail party was more of a fish fry. The men drank stag beer and gathered around the deep fryer in the garage. The women sat in the living room, smoked cigarettes, gossiped, and listened to the stereo. I just turned 5. My siblings, jealous of my agile mind and knack for fitting in, would have nothing to do with me. So my parents' parties were the perfect opportunity for me to entertain and mingle amongst my intellectual peers. It was an older crowd, but I was a social chameleon and knew how to work the room. The old and infirm talk of their medical conditions, changes in bowel movements and such. It was the perfect venue to unveil a bit of work I'd recently had done. I approached 3 women who were wedged into a love seat. "Y'all want to see my hernia scar?" Of course they did. Who wouldn't? It's also possible they had no idea what I'd ask. I'd yet to master my R's. Squirrel was squirrel, Uncle Earl was Uncle Earl, and hernia scar was hernia scar. As in, "Y'all want to see my hernia scar?" With shirt tail firmly clenched in teeth, I dropped trowel. The doctor's stitch work was masterful. Silk sutures bunched and gathered the skin into a long, angry welt. The protruding black threads made it look as though a large, hairy caterpillar had crawled onto my groin and then proceeded to die. It was a real showpiece. I was super proud of it. Until one of the women turned her head, covered her mouth, and gagged a bit. It's hard not to take something like that personal. I hoped it was Mom's Vienna sausages and French's yellow mustard that had turned her stomach. Very European, 2 countries, Germany and France. It's an acquired taste, not for everybody. But the other women's faces had also gone sallow. Sallow, that's country for yellow, and yellow is city for yeller. Anyway, You would think a couch full of ladies rot with nausea at the sight of you with your Fruit of the Looms around your knees might be the worst thing that could happen to a guy at a party. You would think. No, the worst thing is to have them laugh uncontrollably when medical terminology escapes you and you refer to your manhood as Little Thang. An unfortunate blunder. It was more than apparent that little was not the word one wanted associated with one's thing. So I pulled up my big boys and headed to the kitchen in search of more refined guests. It occurs to me now, big boys for a little thang? Was that supposed to be ironic? One of Mama and Daddy's cruel jokes? The kitchen crowd looked more promising. Look how cute you look in that shirt, said a woman I didn't know, but who obviously had impeccable taste. They called it my brownie shirt. I simply referred to it as brownie, a white short sleeve shirt that snapped up the front. It had very masculine vertical brown stripes interspersed with tasteful floral columns. My next door neighbor had bought it for me at a garage sale for a dime. The best buck for your buck of any clothing ever purchased, ever. My go-to look, I wore it incessantly. No pants necessary. It was long enough to cover my briefs and still showcase my pale, bruised bird legs. My little girl's a brownie, said the woman. Huh? What was she talking about? What did being a brownie have to do with my brownie shirt? I had not made that connection. 5 years old, and I was an unwitting cross-dresser. My parents, how dare they? I'd obviously misjudged them and the caliber of their friends. Suddenly, in my Fruit of the Looms and brownie, I felt underdressed for the party. I removed myself from the situation, retired to the boudoir where I lay on my white fringed leopard print bedspread. Yes, it's true. And fretted over having to let go of brownie. The next morning, I abandoned my cross-dressing ways and left brownie crumpled on the bedroom floor. Wearing nothing but last year's tighty-whities, a hard look to pull off, I returned to the scene of the crime. Mother stood at the stove cooking breakfast. The only thing colder than the reception I'd received at the previous night's soiree was the kitchen linoleum early that winter morn. Fortunately, I knew of a way to keep warm, and that's exactly what I was doing when the woman cooking my breakfast began to speak. Get your hands out of your big boys. Quit playing with your little thing. Surely she's not talking to me. She said it again. I do believe she is talking to me. Mind your own business, woman, and tend to my pancakes. That's what I should have said, but I could never seem to find the words when she was being irrational. So I chose to ignore her. That woman's mind was always in the gutter. I resented her, implying I was getting some sort of sick pleasure from the activity. Yes, maybe I did have both my hands shoved down the front of my briefs. But good God, woman, put some clothes on me. It was freezing in there. And she would deny me the only source of heat available? I know her puritanical slant on the story will be that she saved me from becoming that man on the park bench who fondles himself in public. But mind you, a pair of pajamas would have also done the trick. Her thick terry cloth robe and slippers did not go unnoticed. Don't get me wrong. Threadbare or not, the briefs and big boy status were cherished, and I'd almost lost it slash them in the past. Any little accident and she'd been there to threaten me with a neatly folded white cotton cloth that cluttered my chest of drawers. You don't want to go back in the diapers, do you? Of course I didn't, but like all of her questions, it was rhetorical. Her conversations were more of a broadcast. A true question requires there be some sort of pause at the end, presumably a place where an answer could follow, but this would have only served to disrupt the rhythm of her monologue. In my late threes and early fours, I was unable to recognize her bluff. Otherwise, when allowed to speak, I would have chosen my words carefully. Sure. You want me to poop in that white cotton triangle so you can spend your days laundering it? No problem, and put some of that powder on my buttocks while you're at it. But even at five, I was unable to find the words to explain myself to her. So the third time she said it, especially since her tone had changed, Bill, get your hands out of your big boys. I caved, extracted both hands from my briefs, and returned to my room to make up with Brownie. We could be friends again, at least when no one else was around.
Bill Scott writes for fun as no one will pay him for it. You can check out some of his scribblings at dirtysmellyhippie.blogspot.com. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack and the River Market District of downtown Little Rock, Arkansas. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Dairy Hollow, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, Urban Garden Montessori, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
We're going to leave you with the title track of our latest CD.
They say it's a lack of communication. We need some time to get away. Sail away and take a long vacation. And we'll dream of better days. I tell you the truth, sometimes I wear a thin disguise, and I'm getting too old to hide it, and I'm getting too old to fight. And look at the mess we've undertaken. Silence says all we want to say. No more meaningful conversation. I feel our love is slipping away. And all these fears and these feelings are held inside. Getting too old to hide it. I tell you the truth, sometimes I wear a thin disguise, and I'm getting too old to hide it, and I'm getting too old to fight. And I'm getting too old to fight.
Thanks, everybody. Hope to see you sometime down the road. We're the Salty Dogs.
Writer accommodations provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, TalesFromTheSouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.